Hello everyone, I'm George from Ireland. Well, welcome back to my channel. This is commenting on the Strategic Defence Review in the United Kingdom. They come out every couple of years and they're usually given some jazzy title. So this one is about raising defence spending to 2.5% of gross domestic product by 2027. Thing is, we don't know what's going to happen to the economy. Is it going to expand? Is it going to contract? So that sum is not decided. Rather than say we're going to spend X amount, we don't care if the economy gets smaller. We're still going to spend that or do whatever it takes. We'll cut spending in other areas. We'll tax more. We'll borrow more. Whatever you need to do. Sir Richard Danner, isn't he Lord Danner actually, who's former chief of defence staff from about 20 years ago, and he was saying it'd be better for this government to break its own fiscal rules than to leave defence underfunded. I remember John Major, Conservative MP, or Conservative Prime Minister, 1990 to 97, a deeply unimpressive figure. Perhaps the only wise thing he ever said is there are no votes in defence. He's just not a vote winner to say we're going to beef up defence. Now, the Conservative Party in the 1980s certainly thought it was, though. They had a poster, so this is Labour's policy in defence, a soldier in full, combat kit with camouflage cream going like that, hands up. But these days it's not. I mean, since 1945, there have been cutbacks and cutbacks for 80 years. Now, much of that's been sensible. You don't need huge numbers anymore. And, the British Empire is long gone. It's never, ever coming back. There were like, was it 1,400 vessels in the Royal Navy before the Second World War? They're now only 60. But anyway, someone's gone too fast, cut into muscle and not just fat. And yeah, things are different. They think tanks are not as crucial as they used to be. They definitely still have a role. Now, I'm a complete civilian, which probably shows why I don't know what I'm talking about. But having listened to some military experts, they say that people the death of the tank has been exaggerated, and they still have a purpose, as the Ukraine war has amply demonstrated. There's obviously new technology, unmanned aerial vehicles. Isn't that a bit sexist? Unpersoned aerial vehicles, drones as they're commonly called. Those are vital. There are all sorts of drones, a sort of £500 one, so anybody can buy, up to American Predator drones, up to $100 million, so on. Just in some ways as good as fixed wing combat aircraft, with the added advantage if you don't need a pilot, which is training. There's human error. If it gets destroyed, you haven't lost a person. Things like that. It doesn't get sleepy, all the rest of it. So 2.5% of GDP, and at the next parliament is to rise to 3% of GDP. Okay, and even that, there's even then that's there's certain conditionality. That's depending upon the economic situation. So they to enhance and upgrade capabilities, the part of AUKUS, the Australia, United Kingdom, United States agreement about nuclear-powered submarines, to have 12 of them. Now, these are not the ones that launch nuclear missiles. They just got a little nuclear reactor on board, so they can produce their own electricity or whatever. So they don't need to go up to get more fuel quite so often as in stealth. They can remain hidden for longer. What else? The Astraea nuclear warhead program, £15 billion going to be put into that, supporting thousands of extant jobs and six more munition factories, over 7,000 missiles, because they said at the beginning of the Ukraine war, it showed that the cupboard was almost bare, that the United Kingdom had so few shells and missiles, could only fight a war for a few days, because you run into these things very, very fast indeed. So these things need to be manufactured, also stored, and have to look after them. I don't understand about the storage conditions and so on. One of the things is you can get them to be produced in cheaper places like Pakistan and Turkey, but you can't rely on that in the war. It might be cut off. Yeah, that you can't get the supplies. They might be on the enemy side or whatever. So that's a problem as well. And then they've establishment of Cyber M Command, because cyber is really important. This taking down the enemy's communications or whatever, putting out black propaganda to demoralize the enemy, anything. Could they even take over your AI, get your weapon systems to fire on you? Could they jam the drones? I don't even know where this stuff begins. That's really important. And I'm just thinking, so this is a new sort of cyber force. How military will they be? Will they have to wear uniforms or not? Will there be excused military discipline like square bashing just to get the people in? You don't need ordinary military duties. You have to do this. You can be nerdy, that's fine. But I just thought make it an attractive option to school leavers, join that rather than IT degree, maybe get an IT degree on the way for free. Okay. And the digital targeting web. So that is really important. And, you know, they say the generals always fight in the last war, but they're always studying extant wars to see what advances have made in military technology. So the British Army had about 100,000 troops in 2010. It's now 72,000. Until very recently, it was falling. And there are also some problems with that. I mean, some American tourists asked me the other day, why is recruitment and retention such a problem? I mean, overwhelmingly, those who joined were working class white boys. There are fewer of those around in both real and absolute numbers. And this other, the psychosis of whiteness and white privilege, that sort of put people off that they're bad. Toxic masculinity. Eddie's a bit macho, thinks, am I to be ashamed of myself? Is that bad? I'm not macho, by the way. But machismo does go with, you think, the military mindset of it? No. So what else? Britain is so evil, is the most vicious, satanic country ever, is committed endless atrocities, is just always a force for wickedness and cruel, and all this kind of stuff, being actively anti-patriotic. Now, is the very beginning of broad-mindedness to be a bit self-critical. And I certainly go out of my way to highlight some of the darkest chapters of British history when the United Kingdom has aggressed others, committed massacres and so on. But it is possible to overemphasize this and make people abominate their own army. Wow. Now, I wouldn't want to go as far as China and Russia and so on, where there's this ultra-nationalist, totalitarian, bellicose propaganda just poisoning young minds. But there's such a thing as a golden mean. So we need to get back to that happy medium. If we got as many women as to join as men, there'd be no recruitment crisis. Only about 10% of recruits are women. And then the thing is, signing up for 5 years is quite daunting. Remember, this is the gig economy. People change jobs much more frequently than they used to. The job for life kind of thing is gone. The idea of joining in your mid-teens and stay to the day you retire age 66 or something. So the five-year contract is a bit off-putting. One of the few good ideas they've had is a gap-year thing. This would be short service commission to be an officer. I don't know how they rushed them through officer training in a month or something and did it for just 1 year. Posh boys did it as a gap year. But do that for the enlisted ranks. And if after 1 year, if you like it, stay on for a further 4. You don't like it, you may leave. Now, the downside of that is that people say we waste all our time training people. I knew a German army officer, and one of the reasons she agitated for the abolition of conscription is to say we waste our time training these people in a year just in the sun to be a little bit useful. They go. But isn't there talk about bringing it back, actually, in Germany now? So the idea is to increase full-time military personnel in the army up to 76,000, but to make it 10 times more lethal, which I think is probably overambitious. Okay, so NATO first, really emphasize going to be in NATO, and this will also boost economic growth. Now, I remember reading a critique as it says, okay, the purpose of defense procurement is that, is like defense procurement, not to boost the economy. You buy whatever the best weapon system is, whatever the best bang for your buck between the number of these things and their capabilities and so on, and not say, oh, well, let's support the economy in an economically failing town, even if the asset you then manufacture is below par, not enough of them, not reaching the delivery date and stuff like that. No, just don't have any other objectives, only one objective in mind, to get the best asset you can for that amount of money or more of them. You know, sometimes more of medium quality is better than very few of excellent quality. And even that means buying from other countries. So that's another consideration. And expanding the number of warships in the Royal Navy. There are problems like that. Those four submarines which can launch nuclear missiles, as in one is coming back from patrol, another's going out of patrol, another's in refit, the fourth in case something goes wrong. There's the continuous at-sea presence, but apparently they're in a poor state of repair. It's taking longer in refit. The sailors or submariners having to go out for longer, and that's too much of a drain on them. People are not willing to sign up to that. People are just not toughened up for a life of resilience. I know that obviously there's some teenagers and people in their 20s who are obviously hard as nails. I'm not remotely tough, by the way. You need to persuade obviously more ethnic minority people to join, and the British Army's had some success in that. With the black community, fairly successful. With the Asian communities, not really. Very few British Indians, British Pakistanis, and so on. Because also the United Kingdom was fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. There was a misconception the British Army was somehow anti-Muslim. That needs to be corrected. The Sikh community has a very proud martial tradition, but again, not many of them joined the armed forces. So maybe more successful outreach. Obviously, gay people feel completely comfortable and welcome in His Majesty's armed forces these days. And then sometimes, what are you going to do? Can you prioritize the army, the navy, the air force? If you just give a tiny bit to each, it's not really increasing capability. Now, sometimes I think the United Kingdom needs to get real and get with the program and think that what defense is, that actually is protecting your own homeland and not projecting power into the Pacific. This is overambitious. Or, you know, having a naval base in the Persian Gulf. What's that about? There are no British possessions there. There haven't been for a very long time. So actually, to be patrolling the North Sea and the North Atlantic, and not really being that much of a blue water navy, not being about projecting power. And I was speaking to a Royal Naval officer saying that the age of the aircraft carrier is over. This is the last generation of them because we've got ultra long range aircraft. We've got refueling in the air. We have drones and so on. So these current aircraft carriers will be decommissioned in about 20 years, and probably that'll be it. And these things are expensive, are billions of pounds worth of planes, and require so many other vessels to escort them. Doesn't really have enough of that. The United Kingdom would not be able to liberate the Falklands again. So other things, recruitment and retention, getting more people to join. And it was a stupid system of farming out to a civilian company, which might have been all right if it was a good one. But people applied to join, and by the time they actually got invited to start training, a year had gone by. And these people in their late teens, early 20s, often said, "No, forget it. I wasn't hanging around for a year. I took another job then, enjoying it, succeeding it. No, I'm not leaving. If you treat me that disrespect, forget it." So need to speak to a military person at a very early stage and be able to go for their medical and start their training in a few months at most. Rejecting people on stupid grounds. What my friend is was half Finnish, half British, and he'd done his military service in Finland, and then the RAF wouldn't take him because of that, in case Finland called him back. Well, if he's in the RAF, he just wouldn't let him leave. But anyway, but he was allowed, able to join the British Army eventually to raise the age at which he could join. You used to have to join the army at 26 or something, raise that. Physical fitness doesn't matter as much because some of it is done by drones or whatever, the heavy lifting and the running around. It still matters somewhat. So increasing the retirement age are quite sensible for some people have to join at any age for the non-combat tasks, administrative tasks, operating a drone like playing a computer game. Some of that is sensible. What I was going to say, I mean, air defense, is there some Iron Dome system? Is that viable for the United Kingdom and other countries are patriots? I don't know what the UK's air defense is. So yeah, could do got to do more with not that many more people. What else could people leaving because the housing isn't good enough, something quite simple to fix, that the hot water isn't working, that there's rising damp, actually quite cheap to fix, or about mortgages were too difficult. So could the government not just act as a guarantor of the mortgage? The government's not going to go broke over a few houses if the mortgages aren't repaid. So that would recruit retain people as well. All these investigations into people for what they allegedly did in the Troubles in Northern Ireland. Now, I know there were soldiers who committed crimes in Northern Ireland, even up to and including murder. But my approach would be to say, we draw a line under it. Nobody will be prosecuted for anything they did before the Good Friday Agreement. If they're in a loyalist terrorist organization, a Republican one, the Crown Forces, whatever, if it's related to the Troubles anyway, never prosecuted, and that's it, and then it's over. Maybe we could investigate for the sake of bringing closure to whoever. Because people say, well, if I join now, I allegedly do something wrong. 50 years later, I might be prosecuted. And no, I'm not up for that. So there are a number of things that need to be done to improve the situation, to guarantee this money is there. I mean, at least the shell production has increased a lot, those 155 millimeter shells. Anything else that could be done? I mean, yeah, often they don't have that many sailors. They need three crews for certain ships. And there are too many admirals paid over £100,000 each. 40 admirals, only 25 ships, other vessels which are too small to count as ships. Why do you need so many admirals? There are more admirals now than there were in 1939. It's insane. So all chiefs and no Indians. I'm not sure what else could be done to improve things like that. So yeah, better recruitment and retention. It costs so much to recruit someone through the advertising, training process, the money, and also the time of the trainers. I think one of the ideas is to offer people bonuses to extend by another 5 years. A month's salary would take a year's salary tax-free or something, and that'd be a saving in the long run. Okay, and then after this war is over, this talk is, could they re-recruit Ukrainians? The United Kingdom has invested a lot in training them and kit, and say, if Ukraine ends this army, this is with an army a million strong, recruit 10,000 of them quite easily, get more of the Afghan special forces out to join the British Army, things like that. They're allowing European Union citizens to join. That's a good thing as well. Okay. Allowing, military boarding school, more people to go to that at 16 with a view to join the Army, Navy, and Air Force, and not would be obliged to do so. So all sorts of ways the armed forces could improve. Obviously, I don't know that much about the technicalities. Right. Thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, georgecallan79@gmail.com. I mean, as usual, the United Kingdom is not spending enough on it. There's all this talk, no action. The Conservative government was appalling on this, didn't meet the 2%. despite what George Osborne said, lying, pretending stuff was defense spending when it wasn't, finally increased because of the Ukraine war. The peace dividend is over. It was very short-sighted. Or are these more horses than tanks? Okay, have a show horse unit, 100 horses, not 500. Goodbye.